That was like low key worse than whatever we'd listened to like a few days
that
ago.
That was that, bad. I thought you were exaggerating earlier. Like, oh yeah, he hates Kyle. Okay, yeah. It's tough to watch that entire thing that we just watched and feel like you're exaggerating.
Because we legit, like Trey Lyles, yeah, he's doing this, practicing with this like, coach, this, and that.
Jawad thinks he's still a player.
His whole demeanor changed.
And then, yeah, hey, Mike, what's going on with Kevin? Yeah, we'll do this cool little activity called the next game, and Mike was playing pickup with those guys.
Can I sprinkle some sincerity into this? Like,
yeah, I
okay,
guess.
Okay. I actually, but this doesn't go to oh yeah, Mike just randomly hates Kevin Huerter. It wouldn't shock me if this goes back to last preseason when Chris Duarte was going to enter the starting lineup.
Absolutely.
And Kevin Huerter, like, made it a thing, apparently.
Well, I don't think he made it a thing. He was asked about it.
The way he reacted to it, though, I don't think was beneficial to anyone.
I don't think he reacted. I think he reacted surprised. I don't think he did anything wrong. Mike sold it the next day as, oh, Kevin was always going to start the next game. And Kevin was like, I didn't know that.
Hmm.
That media availability that Kevin had. One, and this is very, very important to lay out, and we tried to do it a number of times. Kevin is not the picture of enthusiasm when he's doing media. He's never laughing. He's never smiling. He's never ha, 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 even when he's talking about the Yankees and all of these different things. He's very dry. He's very bland. But he was noticeably, the only word I can think of is sad.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, yeah, I don't know. I'll just be ready. And he was noticeably dejected about what I think he felt like he had lost his starting position.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike the next day is like, I don't know what this is. Kevin was always going to start. And it was clear the day before Kevin was not in on this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Kevin handled that poorly.
You don't think that that's part of the reason he didn't shoot it great last year? You don't think that there was carryover from that? Because I do. That's what I subscribe to.
So feeling like his job was on the line every time he steps on the floor?
Like every time he made a mistake.
I do think there's validity to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to kill him for struggling with that. Like, that's... I know we want to be better. Like, no, I get that. There's always someone willing to take your job.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I'm not going to be overly critical of him. I think the more frustrating part is, you know, if there's a player, a person who is as good as you or better than you, who is breathing down your neck to take your job, yeah, that can create competition. Chris Duarte sucked.
Yeah, he's not an effective player.
He's not. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't say a professional basketball player sucked. He wasn't very good.
In the role they were hoping he would take, he was
And for Kevin, like, helped us get to the playoffs this year. This kid's taking my job. Mm-hmm. Like that to me goes, this dude hates me. I don't do something that Mike wants me to do.
We got to a point last season too where if Kevin didn't have it early, didn't you get the early didn't you get pulled early?
Yeah. Yeah, there are games where he was healthy where he played minutes.
Like 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And at that point when you know that's happening, that's tough to even try and get into a flow. Well,
I think there's this like constant push pull too, with I don't know if it's Mike and the coaching staff or the front office or ownership. I have no idea, but it feels like there's this constant like offense defense push pull thing, where Mike's philosophy is very much like we need to be better defensively, the offense will come. We need to be better defensively, whereas somebody it feels like there's somebody in the building like no Kevin Huerter. Doug McDermott, here, have these guys. We're trying to score more baskets. Maybe it's Kenny Caraway. He's in Mike's ear going, we need more buckets. Mm-hmm. Forget defense. And I think Mike looks at a player like Keon Ellison is like, this is that dude. This dude came in last year and changed what we were able to do defensively. And Kevin Huerter is getting isolated and attacked relentlessly on the defensive end. And he doesn't do enough offensively to make up for that. It's not like he's scoring 30 a night.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I think it wouldn't surprise me if there's somebody in the building like, yeah, Huerter, you got to play him. You got to play him. You got to get him in there. He should start over Keon.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care. Just, yeah, he's playing 5-on-5. He's not even back yet.
Part of me wonders if Mike's even sold on Keon. Like, as the starting two guard for the team to go into the playoffs this year. Part of me wonders if he's sold on him. Mike might be looking for a unicorn. He might be looking for something that doesn't exist or isn't attainable. If he could morph a super player between Kevin Huerter and Keon Ellis,
yes,
he'd do it.
Yeah,
but that player doesn't exist on this team. They're two different players.
Yeah, I
don't think he loves either one of them.
Yes,
at that point, then you probably trade Kevin Huerter and someone else this season. That's what it is.
Mike's probably like, is he still here?
He was so amped for him to get traded this offseason. He showed up day one. There's Kevin.
He's fuming right now because the Kings have announced they've waived Scalabiciere. So Scalabiciere, along with Boogie Ellis, Terry Taylor, and Broderick Thomas, have been waived by the Sacramento Kings following practice today. As Mike just told us, Scal was out there practicing when that media clip was done.
He was more excited to talk about Scal, who was about to get waived.
He was more excited to talk about any and everything than he was Kevin Huerter.
I was a little confused, like, where he was taking that answer, too. I don't know, like I guess, like, the next game is, like, something they do or whatever. It's like, yeah, it's like, pregame, yeah, they'll play 5-5. It's like, all right, I guess that's it.
That's it?
That's Mark it. Wong has it good in the chat right here. He says Kevin Huerter is to Mike Brown like Toby is to Michael Scott.
Oh, that is a great analogy.
Yes, that's really
that
good.
We're reliving the episode of where, like, oh, yeah, Toby's in the annex or whatever. Mike's like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Ha, 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 ha.
I'll just wait till he gets traded and he starts singing Goodbye, Kevin. Goodbye, Kevin. It's been nice. Man.
Can we cut that?
This is crazy.
The day?
Absolutely.
Inevitably
not.
Leaves.
Do not cut that. Let's wait. I just want to see if he's asked another question about Kevin Huerter.
Tighten things up, go hard in practice. It's a long layoff between games.
Sounds like
yeah. So we just want to be smart managing the guys. Today we had a non-contact practice for everybody.
That's what we figured.
It wasn't long. We just had some muscle memory stuff, but we also added some stuff because now we want to add some stuff that we did last year that was good. To help alleviate some of the pressure of what we're facing defensively, and so these next 6 days we'll add some familiar stuff for the most part.
Yeah, Mike's in preseason form. Mike's had a preseason as bad as the Kings have. His preseason press conferences have been tough. His media scrums have been tough.
So the Kings had a non-contact practice, and Kevin Huerter didn't take part in it.
Yeah,
is that what I'm hearing?
I don't know, dude. He played a game called Next Game.
Oh, yeah, totally. While the coaches were in a meeting.
Look. This is. I think he's still talking about Doug McDermott. Just smiling when he's talking.
Another guy. I'm not saying it's Reggie Miller.
No, he's just smiling
at all. But Reggie Miller's another type of.
Yeah, I don't. Okay.
So is Kevin Huerter not with the guys? Because we can maybe go back to the Trey Lyles answer. But I feel like Trey Lyles is at least on the court around.
Doug McDermott said he's going to the Halloween party as Kevin Huerter. I think that's the only fun Kevin Huerter mention we got today. I don't know what Kevin did. James is taking the longest drive from Roseville in history. Maybe he can tell us when he gets here.
Yeah, because it's like, because to me it kind of came off, and I could just be misunderstanding, but it kind of came off like, yeah, Trey Lyles is here, whatever, working off to the side, just whatever, he's working, he's here. Kevin more practice with the other guys.
Mike was in a meeting when Kevin was practicing.
Yeah, like he's not around. Like Kevin's just not around is how it's coming off.
Kevin, have a work from home day.
Exactly, bro.
Amari, right. Doug going to put that costume on and immediately get ignored by Mike.
Hey, who does Mike Brown like more? Kevin Huerter or the dude at Kings Games that dresses up like Kevin Huerter?
Oh, man. Probably the dude who dresses up like Kevin Huerter.
Does dude who dresses up like Kevin Huerter still wear the headband, even though Kevin Huerter is not wearing the headband?
We don't know yet. We don't know yet. I'm gonna go.
Yeah, I think you have to commit fully to the bit. Okay.
Yeah, you got to take the headband off. If Kevin's not wearing the headband, you don't wear the headband.
Mike Brown hates them both, though.
What talking to him and watching, he absolutely does. And watching kids look at him on the concourse. With a slight bit of confusion on their face is pretty amazing.
It's really good.
They look up at him like, and then they inevitably always look at their, you know, person that they're with. Like, explain? Like, what's going on over here? Shouldn't he?
Well, that dude's like 5'11". Kevin Herter's a solid 6'7".
Well, yeah, but like little kids don't know.
They
got to
figure it out.
Okay.
It's time to learn.
Well, you're at a basketball game. I guess now is the time to learn. Oh, man. I did not expect the media clips to be that adventurous. We got a De'Aaron media clip. We could play the De'Aaron Fox Cuss League. I see James is coming in to get settled over here. I think he grabbed a donut on his way in.
I would do the exact same thing.
Let's see here. Okay, anybody got De'Aaron cussing?
Yeah. I feel like at this point, we'd be naive to say no. We'll set the over-under at 2.5 minutes.
You're going to go?
Yeah, I'm going to go. James is here.
All right. We're just vibing. Do whatever you want. Well, okay, that's a hell of a still shot on De'Aaron Fox right there. Here we go. Let's see if De'Aaron cusses.
What did you see from last night?
I think especially starting the game, it was a lot of turnovers. I think we had 9 in the first quarter. And then once teams get out in transition, start seeing the ball go through the basket, obviously confidence starts to grow, and then, you know, it's hard to stop a team at that point, no matter who's out there.
Is there one thing that might give you concern heading into the regular season with you guys?
For us, I mean, we have to be able to contain dribble penetration. I think that was a big thing, and then fouling. I think those two were big things for us, and we show stats like how many times the ball touches the paint, and then points per possession on those possessions, and then how many times the ball doesn't touch the paint, and the points per possession on those possessions. And obviously, we're a much better defensive team when we don't allow the ball to get into the paint. But with that, we need to be a lot more consistent in that end.
Got a new addition today with Doug. I know you're looking forward to playing with him, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, when he came, I was like, God, we always got to have two Iowa guys here. It's great. Obviously, you know, he's a veteran, and everybody knows exactly what he brings, and he also brings some size for us. So I definitely think he's a good addition. Obviously, we haven't shot the ball well in the preseason, but, I think everybody's looking forward to getting to the game where they start to count and make sure everybody has their legs under them.
Some good stuff from De'Aaron Fox right there. James Hamm of the Insiders with us here, fresh from practice on D'Lo and Casey. James, let's just get right into this. You were in that media scrum. You were trying to get some answers regarding Kevin Herter. We didn't watch the entire 8-minute clip of Mike Brown. You got to convince me that Mike does not hate Kevin Herter's guts. He laughed and smiled about everything. We're unclear as to... He was asked if Mike practiced, and he was like, yeah, I didn't see it. I was in a meeting. He's talking about next game up or next game or something like that. Like, what is happening?
With Kevin?
Yes.
Kevin's there. Like, I think he's ready to play.
Did he have a... So you noted that Trey Lyles was on the floor with a red jersey. That means no contact, right?
Yeah, no contact for both Trey and... Very surprising, Devin Carter out on the court shooting in front of us. I was very, like, hang on a second.
He's a long way away. He's still months and months away.
He won't be reevaluated until January. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about 3 months from now. So to see him out, like, sort of messing around and shooting, I mean, he's shooting free throws and, like, hanging out. I thought that was interesting. But I think Kevin Herter is, like, really close to, like, being cleared.
What did I miss? I thought he was already cleared.
He was cleared to go back to full contact. So
what's the next hurdle then?
The next hurdle is getting practices in where you're actually getting full contact. And you have to remember, he got cleared for full contact.
So there's no medical hurdle to clear. He's cleared it.
Yeah, well, sort of. Because what the Kings do is they have a ramp up. They have a very specific... group of, you know, they want to see you go 1v1 and then 2v2 and 3v3 and 5v5. Mm-hmm. And they want to make sure that you go through all these steps as you're getting cleared to come back. So I think Kevin was pretty clear that, like, I think on Saturday he was able to come in and get the 1v1 workout in. And then he's already got to 2v2. I think it's even possible he's been cleared for 5v5. So now it's just a matter of, like, when does he understand the role, like, whatever they're asking him to do, he's got to be there to start going through the motions of the play sets. And again, he's got to keep continuously play through contact. He has to learn, again, almost how to hit somebody again, how to play defense again a little bit, because it's been 7 months where he's not allowed any contact at all. He's been shooting for months. But whether or not he's been cleared to do anything else on a basketball court, the answer is no, he was not. Now we're just seeing sort of the build-up, the return to play. And I see the look, but a return to play when somebody rolls an ankle and is out like 3 weeks, and a return to play when somebody has shoulder surgery and is out 7 months, are two totally different things.
I understand, but it's not like Herter has. We saw Herter on the floor with Doug. We saw it with Doug and I think Domas, maybe DeMar, in one of those LA videos. Now, I don't know what Kevin was doing, but he was there. It's not like Kevin's been, you know, sitting at the house eating chips waiting to get cleared. Like, he clearly has been working. He looked phenomenal in the video we saw, at least in the workout clothes we saw. Like, he looks like he's in tremendous shape.
Yeah.
I guess I just don't understand really what we're talking about, especially when, now maybe I just don't understand how this process works. I think he was cleared before the Utah game, and like not going out there and playing in the Utah game, like it's okay, fine. I thought for sure he was going to play last night.
Oh, he was cleared before the Portland game. He was cleared on the, I think he was cleared Thursday before the second game against the Warriors.
Oh.
But that's to return, that's to for full contact.
Okay.
So then he had the full contact workout, like one-on-one, and then when they get to Sunday, the problem is that even these practices that they're having right now, they're not really practices, right? Like, they're the build up to the regular season. Now from here to next Thursday, they're going to have some light days. They're going to have a couple of days off. They're going to have some just shooting days, but they're also going to have some pretty like rigorous practices, and he will be part of whatever the build up is here. I'm assuming he's going to be fully cleared for 5-on-5 and to actually, you know, play. But again, once he gets to a point where they're like, okay, we're comfortable, and the medical staff is saying we're comfortable, I even think his doctor is going to be involved in the discussion. Like, are you ready? Plus, he told us, like, he has to figure out what it's like, because his left shoulder does not feel like his right shoulder still at all. So,
it's,
you know,
not going to for a while.
It may never. And he said, I have to live, you know, sort of understand that and figure out how to play with it like this. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of like when someone has a major surgery like this, especially an upper body injury. Like, I think the concern is like going for rebounds. If he goes to dunk a ball, going out and trying to play defense on the perimeter, you know, trying to close out on a 3-point shot, and whether he feels comfortable or not. You know, so those are the things you're trying to work through right now. I would expect that if it's not the regular season, like opener, it'll be within the first week of the season or so that he's back on the court. And I think that the Kings may have just bought themselves a little bit of time with Doug McDermott, you know, where if you need him to play the role of Kevin Herter, that's kind of who he is.
No, I assume no surprise is with today's cuts of Scal, Terry Taylor.
No, unfortunately, I don't think there are any, like, I mean, most of these guys, I think, are going to Stockton. At least they're going to have an opportunity, I would think, especially Scal, mm-hmm. who they have his G League returning rights. Mm-hmm. And then they brought in, was it Antoine Davis, Drew Timmy, and one other today. Sharif O'Neal.
Yeah.
They're signing all those guys today. They will be then waived. And this is a way that they give those guys a little bit of extra money, so they can show up and play in the G League. They also, with Boogie Ellis, I went back through, and I've been under the understanding that he was not, he would have to go through the G League draft. I don't know exactly how much they gave him in guaranteed money, but he signed an Exhibit 10 contract for the summer. And if he makes more than a standard Exhibit 10, which caps out at $75,000, if he makes more than that, then they can't send him to the G League. If he makes less than that, 75 or less, then they can actually send him as an affiliate player, as long as he's one of the last cuts like he is. So he can go to the G League without going through the G League draft if he made less than $75,000 on his training camp invite.
Do you, roster cuts, that's it? Are we done?
Yeah, I mean, outside of, like, the guys that got signed today will get cut as well.
Well, yeah, that the formality part of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to do anything else as of today. Like,
they still have a
They're going to be a
roster
14.
Spot?
Yeah, they're going to be a 14. So, so I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they sign one more guy like what we've seen with like these little small contracts where you sign them and then waive them so they can go to the G League. And I also wouldn't be surprised if they looked at all the other roster cuts around the league, and maybe there's a player that they do like and that they can bring in.
Okay. Well, that's the formalities of the preseason being over and essentially training camp ending and getting into, well, we're getting into preparation now for the Minnesota Timberwolves next week. Because we're all taking part in it. What was this preseason? It's over. Yesterday sucked. It was just as bad as what we'd seen a couple of nights ago at the Golden 1 Center. We heard De'Aaron breaking it down just a couple of minutes ago, some of the flaws in what they did over the course of the last five games, things that need to be better when the games start to count. But like, what was this? It looked like a bunch of guys that, honestly, with the exception of Domas and really Doug McDermott, the guys who were on the floor yesterday didn't look interested.
Yeah, like listening to Mike today, I was intrigued. He said that they still didn't run any play sets the entire. He's like, we're just doing our flow offense and saying, hey, can you figure out ways to beat teams doing the flow offense?
Answer is no.
Yeah, probably. But then they've been working with all their play sets on top of that. And we might have seen some of their play sets like hidden within the flow offense. Mm-hmm. The players know what all of the play sets, and there's possibility that they're like, hey, you know, really quickly, let's run this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a little bit of it, but I think that they've been holding back a whole lot of stuff. And then this last week is going to be, okay, like, how are we going to game plan for game one? This is like sort of, I want you to run flow X amount, like X percentage of the time, but then we're going to start filtering in like these play sets. So I want to see what you guys look like with this and this. And so I think we're going to start to see more and more of the offense, but I also don't think they wanted to tip their hands all that much in the preseason. And even if it looked clunky, I think that's okay with them. They don't really value the preseason as much as like fans do. And, you know, the concerned people out there looking at this and saying, hey, this does not look like a good product right now.
And that idea of the offense that you just explained that Mike ran here this preseason, that's probably part of the reason like it looked a little extra clunky when we saw guys like Mason Jones, Kobe Jones, some of those different guys out there, because they don't have the experience of just running an offense that doesn't have structure to it. You run a structured offense, like maybe you call them plays, maybe those guys are a little bit stronger in that sense. But when you're, hey guys, just go out there and vibe, go out there and flow a little bit. Yeah, maybe not so much. Maybe that's not the strong suit of the Joneses, of Mason, Colby, and Isaac.
Yeah, I mean, so you want to see those guys play, though. And
no, for sure, but I don't think it's fair to expect them to play the way that maybe DeMar and...
No, of course not.
Those guys would in a free-flowing form.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. And
that's
think...
where I felt like things looked the worst. And granted, I know it's a different caliber of player, but also at the same time, you're going against a different caliber of player, and it felt like the Kings were always kind of short.
I think when you listen to De'Aaron and he brings up the first two games, and he's like, you know, we were leading in the first half when the starters were really playing, and even then they were filtering some of these other guys. Sure, they gave up like 15 threes in the first half to the Warriors, but they still led 68-66. They're looking at, okay, we got to figure out the three-point thing, but you're also playing without Trey, you're playing without Kevin. You know, even at the beginning, the first two games, they're playing without Jordan McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm.
So
who's turned out to be really good.
Yeah, he looks good, doesn't he?
He does. He looks really good.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. Hey, and for that matter, like watching Doug McDermott, like I don't know if you guys listened to him. Like
we played a little bit of it. It was another kind of a length that he gave us his, you know, his journey from.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, I flew physical, tired, went out there and got some shots up.
Just like he said, yeah, I've got to do what I got to do to like get ready. And by that means run around and get ready. I did ask him what he was going to wear for Halloween, and then he didn't answer, But as soon as he walked away, he like grabbed me by the shoulder and said, "Hey, I'm going as Kevin Herter." And I thought that that was hilarious.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. I enjoyed watching him play last night. It got to the point where I felt like Kobe in his last game, where I didn't want anybody to shoot the ball except for Doug McDermott.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, give him the ball. This game sucks. This game. I have no interest in it. I just want to see Doug shoot the ball every time he touches it.
Yeah, I know. Even
and he almost did.
Last night, I got a little bit of grief online, and then I even heard it today by from one of the media relations. Like, hey, you know, you put that... I put out the gif of Philip Seymour Hoffman from Along Came Polly where,
let
you know,
it rain.
Let it rain. And they're like, you know, he ended up hitting shots. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, I've never watched a dude like get off a plane and take 11 threes in a game 5 minutes yep. later. And we're not talking mid-season.
No, this is Buddy McDermott out there.
Yeah. We're not talking like mid-season where a guy gets traded and then has to fill in because there's a bunch of guys who got traded and some guys aren't there and you're trying to figure everything out. No, this dude hadn't gone through a training camp ever. Kevin Herter is like 14 steps to get cleared to play. Doug McDermott walks off a plane, you know, laces up his sneakers and like, hey,
play basketball.
11 threes. I got this. Like, all right.
Yeah, got a little tired. Yeah, I bet you did.
I got tired. Like, and I didn't even shoot the ball, man.
I bet you did. Let's talk about... Now, let's save this. Let's come back, Jesse. We'll come back because I'm going to ask you a question that I think is going to be a lengthy answer. So we'll come back. James Hammond, the Insiders, is with us, and everyone knows I'm going to ask you about Keon Ellis, and I'll even give you time to prepare. I need you to make the case that Keon Ellis has earned the starting two position. So James will do that. I'm sure he feels comfortable doing it. His wife is an attorney. We'll come back. Stilo and Casey, James Hamm here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. All right, back here to close out the week with our man James Hamm from the Insiders and fresh from Kings practice. James, with the five preseason games being behind us, obviously not a very successful preseason. For some, a bit of a frustrating preseason. But I'll ask you, and I posed the question, and I don't think I gave a definitive answer to it, but I did ask the question and gave reasons to why I think it's a fair question. But has Keon Ellis done anything to earn the starting two guard spot for the Sacramento Kings?
I mean, I think it's a good question, to be honest. I think defensively he's been fine. He certainly has had way too many fouls. But I kind of look at him and he's playing end-of-the-year basketball where I don't think everyone else is. And so, like, he's cranked up the defensive intensity and trying to play a hard-nosed defense. And I think he's picked up too many fouls. You know, he fouled out of one game. He's had four fouls in another game. Overall, like, it's tough because I don't think he's going to be asked to do a lot of scoring throughout the year. And when you look at what he's done in the preseason, I mean, he scored 2 points in the opener, but then 12 points, 11 points, 4 points in that debacle in Utah, and then 10 points against the Clippers last night. And, you know, again, his 3-point shooting has been okay. It hasn't been great, but neither has anyone else's on the team.
Right.
And so what is he, 4 for, I don't know, what is that, 4 for 16? 5 of 16, 17. So again, that's not great, but it's still, like, look at the other numbers that we're going to compare this to. I think he's been okay. And I think that, like, again, when the offense is clunky and it's not working and the sort of your star level players are, it's not working out for them. The two guys who are going to pay for that aren't so much those two, you know, the three big guys. It's going to be Keegan and it's going to be Keon. Well, because if the pick and roll isn't working, or, you know, someone is doing something defensively to stop the Kings, like, stars from doing what they do, then the ball gets sticky and their guys don't have to sag. And so, like, the ball doesn't move freely. Mm-hmm. And I thought what we saw throughout training camp, I mean, throughout the preseason, was really, like, not a lot of ball movement at all. And, you know, the Kings kept getting, you know, I think against Utah they had 32 assists, mm-hmm. which is fine. But that's also, they had like 108 possessions or something, right?
Right,
so yeah, it was something like outlandish how many shots they took in that game. They should have had 40-something assists. That's how many opportunities they had. But even that game, I didn't feel like the ball hopped around nearly as much as it should. The rest of the games, I thought that the Kings did a lot of their offense with smoke and mirrors. A lot of it was fast breaks. A ton of it. They scored 32 fast break points in one game, 30 fast break points in another. And in those games, if you're finishing with like 25 assists, but 15 of them came on a fast break, that means in the half court, your ball is not moving at all. Mm-hmm. And so Keon is going to be the guy who pays for that, because he's not a guy who has the ball in his hands. He's not creating for himself all that much. He's not creating for others. He's being asked to move around the perimeter and shoot three when it's open. So if we're just going to judge him on his offensive production, that's just not fair, because that's not who he is.
Understandable. And Keith asked a great question. What has anybody done to beat Keon out? And Keith's 100% right. I don't know that anyone has. I don't know that there's a clear defining answer. But I also think, you talked about, I feel like Mike sends mixed signals with all of this, with what he wants. And the example I used was, all right, Keon starting. If we get to Thursday and you've got, 2.5-3 minutes left in a plus or minus 2 point game with the Minnesota Timberwolves, Keon's probably not on the floor. Malik is. Which means you're going with the four, and then you're adding Malik to that and removing Keon. Which means you're leaning towards offense, because you can make an argument either way. Man, in those final 3 minutes, you got to get baskets. Malik's a bucket getter. Got to be able to spread the floor. Okay, you're 100% right. Or you make the argument, hey, you need a stop. You need a guy who can get out there and get you a stop. Well, that's Keon. Mike always seems to lead towards Malik and the offensive part of that, which I feel like it's a constant mixed signal as to what exactly he expects from this team. Well, I know what he expects from this team, but what's reasonable to expect when you seem to lean one way at one point in the game and a completely other way at the end of the game?
Okay, so let's just carve out the last 5 minutes of a game, right? And so we got 43 minutes over here. And then we get this last 5 minutes. The last 5 minutes of an NBA game are completely different than the other 43 minutes.
Sure.
They just are.
That's fine.
The game slows down. It becomes much more half court. It becomes much more of mano a mano. You don't see the pace. You don't see the transition buckets. Sure, there's a steal and some guy gets a breakaway, and you get those on occasion. But in the last 5 minutes of a game, De'Aaron Fox always becomes a better defender. Always. And Domantas Sabonis, and like the rotations are crisper, but it's because the whole game is slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're seeing like a frenetic pace in the mid third quarter, and the ball's hopping all over the place, and we're seeing like, 25 shot attempts in the fourth quarter, it really does slow down right at the 5 minute mark. And that's where it becomes such a methodical thing. And when the game becomes methodical like that, you do want your best offensive players, especially guys who can create for themselves and for others. That's who you want in the game. And so I've never had a huge problem with it, unless you've got like one player on the other team that's just going bonkers and there's no way for you to stop them, and you have to have a stop in order to win a game. Then you go to a guy like Keon. Or if Keon is hitting every single three he's taken all day long, then you're like, okay, look, we'll go ahead and ride with Keon late in the game because he gives a better option to win. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of times coaches, they defer to the lineup, the closing lineup, as their best five players, and say, we're going to go win it with these five guys. And, the defense isn't going to be as big an issue because the pace of the game is slowed down and you're not going to have these like super open mistakes that happen throughout the other 43 minutes.
Is there a situation where, I asked Casey this earlier, and just for the record, I do not like this idea, but, a lot was made even during this preseason about the Kings being relatively small. Well, we know Kevin Huerter is bigger than Keon. He's bigger than Malik. Like, is there a realistic scenario where you think we have situational starters Not obviously, we're talking about one position. We're not talking about four. Like, no, this actually makes a lot of sense for Keon to start this one. Here's how it helps De'Aaron. Here's how it helps DeMar. Here's why it makes sense versus this lineup. I mean, Golden State's probably a perfect example. We could put Keon on Steph here for the bulk of these minutes, and it relieves De'Aaron for, as you just laid out, 43 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, this matchup, Minnesota maybe being one of them, Brooklyn. Well, I don't even know what Brooklyn looks like anymore, but a bigger basketball team. Actually, this makes a lot more sense for Kevin Huerter to start in this one, and here's why. It seems ridiculous. I'm just trying to come up with an answer as to this position here.
No, I think when you look at the reason why Kevin Huerter would start over Keon, it's all going to become about offensive flow. If the ball is moving, the court is moving in a different way. We talked about it a little bit with Mike today about the gravitational pull. Mm-hmm. Like, I talk about this all the time. Mike was talking about this today, that the gravitational pull that not only that Kevin Huerter does, but, you know, actually he was talking about Doug McDermott. He's like, watch what he does. As soon as he walks on the floor, everyone starts talking hot. He's one of the hot guys. He's one of the, you know, he's the hot shooter. You need to make sure that he never gets left open. That's what instantly happens when Doug McDermott steps on the floor. And I asked Mike, is that kind of like Kevin? And he said, exactly like Kevin. As soon as Kevin steps on the floor, everybody watches him run around in circles, and we all think that he's just doing laps and filling up the steps on a pedometer. But realistically, what he's doing is he's pulling the defense one way and another way, and just his ability to get hot from an area and the way that he's moving to get to there, everyone starts to lean that way. And if you can get the defense leaning just a little bit, you can take advantage of it on the other side. And not only that, but you can take advantage of it because if he misses a shot and everyone's leaning one way, chances are if he's shooting a long ball, it's going to skip to the other side where you're now wide open because those guys are being unguarded because the defense is pulled. I think McDermott has that same exact draw. You know, the fact is, like, Kevin Huerter is a more functional version of Doug McDermott on a basketball court. Like, he has been throughout his career. He's a better assist man, a better rebounder. But overall, he's probably even a better defender than Doug McDermott. But Doug McDermott still has that same exact, like, gravitational pull as a shooter.
And I think that's one thing that frustrates me a little bit about the conversation about Kevin Huerter last year, is it was talked about, you know, his defense and how he just got roughed up on the defensive end on a number of occasions. And that's
fair.
It's perfectly fair. We've talked about it on a number of occasions last year. We talked about it a lot. We were begging for him when the shot wasn't falling to get rebounds, get on the floor and get a loose ball, like, whatever, do something to where you're not invisible. Like, it's the Harrison Barnes conversation where there were times where it felt like if Harrison wasn't scoring, he was invisible. Kevin Huerter had games where he clearly wasn't invisible even though the shot wasn't falling. But if you took everything regarding Kevin Herter's defense and kept it exactly the same, but he's averaging 13.5 to 14 points per game, hitting 40% of his threes, none of it's a conversation. That's the part that drives me crazy, because Kevin, it's not like Kevin was an all-world defender the year that the Kings broke the streak the year prior. But he was hitting 40% of his threes, scoring 14 points per game. And so you looked past it a little easier. And I feel like this all boils down to whether Kevin Huerter is the offensive player that he was in year one or year two. If he's the guy in year one, he can slide into the starting lineup no matter what Keon Ellis or Kevin Huerter does defensively. If he's doing that offensively, I think Mike is going to take it. If he's doing what he did last year, I understand why Mike can't take it, because you can't have games where he's 0 for 7 or 1 for 7 or something like that and can't give you what you need on the defensive end. You got to have something from that position.
Like, look, we can talk about offensive rating all we want. We can talk about defensive rating all we want. The only number that really matters is net rating. It's the difference between your offensive rating and your defensive rating. That's the only thing that matters. So if you're giving up, let's just say, 122 points a night, and you're bad defensively, you're a bad defensive team, but you're scoring 132 points a game, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't. This is the argument that Rick Adelman used to fight all the time with his when the Kings were in their glory years. Elston Turner, the same thing. It's like if you want to see us be a – if you want to see the score lower in the game, we can slow it down. But what does that do?
Mm-hmm.
Like as long as we're outscoring our opponent, it doesn't matter if we're outscoring him 100 to 94 or if we're outscoring him 122 to 116. It's still the same thing. The difference is the 122 to 116 is just a much prettier style of basketball. It's much more enjoyable for everyone to be part of. And there are going to be plenty of games where the Kings blow teams out using their offense because if they get hot, there's almost no way to stop them. And that goes for the early 2000s, and it goes for the team they have right now. This team gets hot. They can put up 140 in a game. And you're hoping you don't give up 150 because we've seen that act, and it's not great. But that's where you have to look at like all of these, the idea that Mike Brown has for a team and the idea that Monty McNair have for a team, they are pretty diametrically opposed. Like one of them wants an offensive juggernaut. One of them wants a defensive juggernaut. But at the end of the day, the way they come to a marriage here in the middle is wins. And as long as your defense is, I mean, as long as your offense and your defense, your net rating, whatever the middle of that is high enough, it doesn't really matter who's winning the battle. Like, it's okay to be a really, really good offensive team that plays some defense as long as you're running a plus six net rating or a plus three net rating and you're winning ball games.
What's the most positive takeaway for you from preseason training camp from the last handful of weeks?
Okay, so I think there's subtleties, right? The biggest takeaway I have for like Keegan Murray is I watched him go up against some big dudes who tried to bully him, and he just used his chest and bounced him right backwards. Like, I think his ability to defend up now as opposed to defend down is like spectacular. So I'm excited to see what he looks like because we keep waiting to see what like the finished product of Keegan Murray is.
Yeah.
But people keep moving the goalpost on that kid. Yeah. And I don't know. He's looking around like, man, you guys just keep moving everything. Like there's a possibility that if somehow midway through the season, the Kings acquire a really, really good power forward, that Keegan Murray slides right back to the three and DeMar DeRozan slides up to the two. And here you are again, asking a 24-year-old third year player to completely change his game again.
Yeah.
So I think that's one big thing is Keegan's ability to defend up. I would say that watching Domantas Sabonis and his lack of hesitation in everything that he's doing is so refreshing, whether it's him attacking the rim, him pulling up from 18 feet or 16 feet, him pulling up on the jump shot, on the 3-point shot. None of it have I seen any hesitation. He just looks like a player who's ready to hit another gear. And I don't know if that's going to equate to him averaging more points per game or not, but I certainly think the Kings have been waiting for this moment where you stop seeing the wheels turning. And he's such an elite player. And if he just decides to put the ball on the floor and attack the rim, just do it. Stop waiting. Stop looking at six different progressions and then finally starting to back someone down. That's not the most effective way. And I think what we've seen from him so far is just sort of like the next like version of him. And I think, again, that the work that they've done in the offseason, whether it's Doug and Leandro or, you know, whoever works with him, like, again, like DeMar DeRozan going down and spending time with him, we're seeing, like, whatever hesitation there was in his basketball, like, mindset is going away. And if he can carry that into the regular season for 82 games, I think he's going to be absolutely dominant.
I love Jordan McLaughlin's play. I didn't really know what to expect from him.
Yeah.
When they signed him, I didn't know what to expect from him when I was just like, all right, I'll go along with it. And he was, I guess, a pleasant surprise. I'm not exactly sure what to call it, but it's like, man, he's a player. Like, yeah. he's a player for this team.
I totally agree. I think, you know, when we see him as a starter and he's got to play 24, 25 minutes, you start to see the flaws in it, right? Because he is like maybe 5'11". And there are some issues there. But for me, like, everything that he does is just really high basketball IQ. He plays within himself. He does not make a bunch of rash decisions. You know, he deflects so many passes. It's crazy. He gets a bunch of steals. I think he's just like just a really smart basketball player. And for teams like the Kings, like, you can't just have like a whole entire stacked roster of like, of, unless you're the Boston Celtics, you can't have all-stars at every position. Mm-hmm. So what you need is guys who come in, they know their role and they do their role to the best of their ability. And I think Trey Lyles is one of those guys. And I think that Jordan, I'm going to put in the same sort of bucket where don't worry if he's averaging 6 points a game or whatever. Look at the intangibles. Look at, like, again, deflections. Look at assist to turnover ratio. Look at his offensive and defensive ratings, because it sure does look like he's a winning basketball player. And that's, again, you need to accumulate as many of these high basketball IQ players that impact winning. And early on, that's certainly what I've seen from him.
Did you get a chance to read Sam's article today over for the New York Times/Athletic? Anything to make of that De'Aaron quote about making sure the Kings are in the right position?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is always going to be about, like, number one, money. And number two, it's going to be about, like, you have to show that you're continuously growing. And I made this point with Kyle earlier today. Like, DeMar DeRozan's only under contract for, like, a guaranteed contract for 2 years. Those are the same 2 years that De'Aaron Fox is under contract. Like, the Kings need to show that they can not just build a like playoff caliber team, but they need to show that they can take the next step. And whether that's, again, Fox and Sabonis taking this leap, Keegan Murray taking a leap with them, Malik Monk taking that leap with them, and they become like this elite group that can make themselves into title contenders, or that means that they've got to go out and get somebody else. You can kind of see where De'Aaron's head is, that he would love to be, you know, again, he's 72 games away from being the all-time leader in games played in Sacramento Kings in the Sacramento era.
Wow.
He's 72 games behind Jason Thompson. So he needs 70.
Jason Thompson leads so many franchise records. It's terrible.
Yeah. So if he hits game 73 this season, he becomes the all-time leader in games played. He would like to play here his whole career. His family's like established themselves here, but it has to, we have to start seeing like his play, and like, it has to translate to something more. Mm. Like the fact that he is missing all NBA and he's not getting an all-star bid because he plays in Sacramento. To me, it doesn't feel good for anybody, and especially for him. You know, you made it one time, and even the one time, I believe he was an injury replacement the first time he made the All-Star team. And so you're still waiting for, like, hey, man, you know, we talked about it. Top 19 guys, of the top 19 yep. scorers in the league, 18 of them were in the All-Star game.
Yep.
And he's the one guy who's not.
Yep.
And you're like, you're looking around like, hey, what did I do wrong? He finished 8th in the league in scoring. He averaged more than Anthony Edwards. He averaged more than Steph Curry. Damian Lillard crushed him. Like, all of these players, Maxey, he averaged more points per game. So if we're going to look at that as the benchmark, because it is for who makes the All-Star team, who scores most makes the All-Star team, and then you're going to leave one guy out, it doesn't feel good. And you can look around the league and say, okay, why? Well, you know.
It's almost like he was punished for scoring 30 points per game for like the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you would have been better off spreading it out, buddy. Like, yeah, you just scored too many points too quick.
Yep.
And then it tapered off a little bit, and all of a sudden, of course, you know, the Kings weren't the best, but they were far from a bad basketball team. They were better than the Golden State Warriors at the time.
Yeah.
Which was certainly frustrating, and then Domas having the season he was having didn't get the acknowledgement either, the second year at least.
Yeah, he was asked about it today and said, look, I'm not gonna sit here and have a discussion about my contract status moving forward, but, you know, like, yeah, I'd want to be here. Like, that's what I gathered from it. And then I look at the Domantas Sabonis quote in that, and it's the same thing he told us at his basketball camp, where they were getting frustrated. He was getting frustrated by the almost.
Yeah.
the, you know, we almost got this guy, we almost got that guy, and we missed. I think they're done with that. Like, go get the, go get us a player that we don't want to talk about anymore. Just go get the guy. Like, if that's what it takes, that's, you know, we're tired of hearing we almost landed this player or we're so close. Like, it, that's not going to cut it from here on out. Like, those guys want to win, and they know that they need really good players in order to win. And other teams are able to close these deals. Why not us? And that's, it's an interesting dynamic, but, you know, look, look, I don't blame Fox at all.
Yeah, I don't either. 49ers or Chiefs? It's your Patrick Mahomes. It's your favorite team versus your man crush.
Yeah, I don't know. We're gonna have to see. I hate seeing the Chiefs after a bye week, but
Andy they also Reid after a bye week.
Yeah, they aren't getting in. The Chiefs aren't. They didn't add any wide receivers, and they still don't have any. So. Just think of Patrick Mahomes.
And they're still 5-0.
And the 49ers offense. Man.
Well, Juwan Jennings is out. Ricky Pearsall is a full go. Ricky Pearsall is going to play no matter how big of a curmudgeon Kyle Madsen is. Ricky Pearsall is playing. He's going to catch one touchdown. It's going to be the greatest story since that fake movie Rudy. And Kyle's going to be mad all of Monday about it.
That'd be
is
amazing.
Our show over? Is it over?
You got 30 seconds.
Right. 30 seconds.
Well, we appreciate y'all so much for being with us. If you're on YouTube, hit the thumbs up before you go. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast as well, available wherever you get podcasts from. And we will count down to game number one this coming Thursday at the Golden One Center. That all begins on Monday, beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.